howdy, y'all. You're listening to Thought Crime Live on Republic Broadcasting Network at republicbroadcasting.org. This is Saturday, January the 21st, 2023. And I'm your host, Stephen Douglas Whitener. I want to thank everybody for joining me out in Mr. Stadmiller's neighborhood. And I'm really glad to be here. RBN, I really enjoy doing this. And I want to ask y'all, if you can, to please support RBN, RBN's listener-supported network. They call us the canary in the coal mine of free speech. If it goes, I mean, where else can you hear, you know, go beyond the official narrative, so to speak, and get the opposing point of view? Sorry, I just had to knock something over right there. And just if you can go and donate to RBN, I heard Mike Rivera say that they had gotten some T-shirts in the other day, that a donation of $100 or more will get you a T-shirt in several different sizes, RBN T-shirt right now. And like I said, my name is Stephen Douglas Whitener, and this is Thought Crime Live. Hello to all you thought criminals, and I have a premier thought criminal here as my guest once again this week. I know someone said I have this guy on a lot, but I think what he has to say is very important, Mr. Mike Gaddy. Can you hear me, Mike?
Yes, sir. Hear you well, Stephen. Thanks for inviting me.
Thanks for being here, Mike. I just knocked some water over on myself. I hope I didn't. I'm glad I didn't have video with that. But, yeah, thanks for joining me. I was thinking about what I wanted to ask you about when we were coming on, and this picture from 10 years ago came up in my mind, where you remember after the Boston bombing that they were going around basically doing raids on people's houses, you know, with SWAT teams from door to door, and they're filming this. And I remember some of the American boobuses out there chanting USA, USA, when they were out there busting down, you know, with no, you know, they basically had declared martial law, this dry run, this false flag. And that just showed me what we're up against when we try to bring this information to the general public.
Well, that's true, Stephen. And
that, yes, go, please, sir.
No, what I was going to say was, it's really hard to, as my grandpa used to say, it's really hard to teach a rock to sing, and to try to get the truth to people who absolutely prefer a comfortable lie is not an easy task.
Yes, sir. Yeah, I'm sorry. The screen got a little damp. I'm sorry, it took a second. Yes, sir. Most people will be more interested in the football game going on than the actual history of events. And I appreciate the work that you do very much, because you have gone back and researched the actual history from the original documents, not only the public documents, but the letters that people wrote to each other, especially focusing on the period around the Revolution and the Civil War. And the things that you bring to light, you know, most people have never learned. And in many cases, the information actively, it was suppressed by the establishment for a long time. For, I forget how long, over 100 years, it was that, I believe it was, that the anti-federalists were unknown in most of academia. Am I right about that, sir?
Yes, that is correct. For probably 1830s to late 1830s to the mid-1950s, anti-federalists did not appear in any historical publication whatsoever. And there had to be a reason for that. But let's not forget the Rees Commission in the 1950s did an investigation of the nonprofit organizations Rockefeller, Ford, and Carnegie. And they found out that those three nonprofit organizations, starting back in about 1906 to 1912, had actually put millions upon millions of dollars into the education system in order to pervert history to the government's point of view. And most people are totally unaware of that, but that's what happened. And how can we expect the people of America to know the truth when for over 100 years we have sent our children into the communist dominated field of education? And the fact that the 10th plank of the Communist Manifesto is mandatory public schools run by the government. Well, if the government runs the school, the people are not going to be taught anything that would make the government look bad. It's just common sense.
Yes, there no ruler or who is going to give you the power to overthrow them, I suppose is the way to put it. Maybe, I don't know, there may be a more apt way to say that, but they're not going to give you the tools you need to dismantle their power structure and build your own, so to speak. They'll teach you enough just to fit into their machine, I suppose, is the way to look at it. And that's, and for a long, it's gotten to the point where I don't think they feel like they even need to do that anymore, that they feel like humans are superfluous now and they can replace us with machines. And they see us as cattle anyway, but, you know, they think that they could replace us with their AI now, it seems to me, like that the arrogance of these people astounds me. And I can see why they would be so arrogant, because they've done this for so long. Most people are completely unaware of the actual history of the Civil War, say, which was more a war of northern aggression than a civil war between states. That, you know, it just, they see history as the Hollywood movie that they've been shown, or the Western, you know. They see us as, anyway, we're always pointed out as the good guy, you know. It's just, no, we're not y'all. That's the sad fact. I'm sorry. And it saddens me to see how many people, you know, go off with visions of preserving something here that's not even under attack. You know, just thinking that they're defending liberty when they're going, you know, war's a racket, as Smedley Butler said. That's one of the things that most infuriates me more than anything else.
I couldn't agree more, Stephen. It's, you know, we look at these things, we see things that's happening. You know, I read, I'm not sure about the time frame, but I just read that two legislators from the state of Virginia have proposed replacing the monument of Robert E. Lee with the monument of Nat Turner.
Yes, sir. Go ahead. I'm sorry. That just,
yeah. And so if that doesn't tell you about American morals, we want to get rid of a statue of a man who was a very devout Christian, and we want to get rid of his statue, but we want to bring in and make a statue for a man who, with several other people, traveled from plantation to plantation, murdering everybody he came in contact with that was white, including children and infants. Is that what America is? Is America no longer a nation that would honor a Christian man, but wants to honor a man who was a, you know, a killer?
Yeah, and that's,
go ahead.
That sounds like South Africa today, that they're going there again. The same thing keeps getting repeated over and over in our history, in our world. That was what was just coming to mind for me at the moment there. But yeah, that they want to build a statue to this guy. Did they even know who he is? I mean, it's like people wear, it reminds me of people wearing the t-shirts of Che Guevara. Honestly, they don't know anything about him, but he was hip and he was cool, you know. But this is even more worse than that. This is not some popular culture propaganda. This is, you said two legislators brought this proposal up in Virginia.
Yes. Yes, they have actually proposed that the statue of Robert E. Lee that was removed should now be replaced with a statue of Nat Turner.
That's infuriating, but it does represent Marxist Republicans more, I guess. I don't know. It's just, oh, that's horrifying. I didn't realize that it was Nat Turner. I've heard people saying something about John Brown before, which is an even worse, you know, mentally ill guy that did the other guy. Yeah, they wanted to honor him too. I hadn't heard about a statue or anything, but I hear people talking about him like he was some freedom fighter. You know, they just are totally ignorant of what actually went on back then.
Well, you know, Stephen, just to illustrate the absolute insanity of Americans, I saw recently where a monument to the 54th Massachusetts had been desecrated, and they had gone in and spray painted, you know, commie and all kind of stuff on the statue. Do these people not realize that the 54th Massachusetts was a black unit?
Probably not. No, I didn't. You mentioned that, it. You know?
That is fully illustrative. I mean, they made the movie about it, the 54th Massachusetts, and now there are people going in and spray painting a monument because they're so damn ignorant they don't realize that that was actually a black unit.
Yeah.
But it was a Civil War monument. Let's tear it down.
What was it that movie Glory that they made?
I forgot. Yes.
I saw that film. Yes, sir. And but you know, most of the people who ended up in the contraband camps didn't get, you know, in the army or stuff. They ended up dead, didn't they, sir?
Well, what a hidden secret that you mentioned the contraband camps. I mean, Nashville, Helena, Arkansas, Fort Nelson, Kentucky, Natchez, Mississippi. We are looking at the very great possibility that there were more blacks who died in contraband camps than there were Confederate soldiers who died during the war.
That's horrifying that many people died, but they're just forgotten. You know, we get this picture that's painted for us of a completely distorted, you know, distorted facts, and it paints the powers that be as the good guys. Anyway, now they're always the good guys. And if there are any problems, the answer to the problem is always to give them more power. That just seems like the same song and dance we always hear. And, it boggles my mind that people still will attack this flag. I mean, they people get conditioned, you know. I think it's almost Pavlovian the way that how Hollywood does it. They painted the picture of the hillbilly plantation owner and you know, and his slaves chained in the backyard like a junkyard dog or something. That's the way that they put it in cartoons. So people think that was reality, and they don't even real. You know, I know that most people, at least the people who listen to RBN, don't think things like that. But you know, if you're out there chanting USA, USA while they're busting down your door and coming to search you for somebody without a warrant and violating your rights, and then, you know, I just don't know what to say. That was what struck me as I was getting ready to go. I was remembering it's been almost 10 years that they had that quote unquote bombing in Boston. And that was the second of the big false flags I remember. But, you know, it depends on how you define them, I guess. Isn't that right? You many people call Pearl Harbor a false flag, too, because knew it was coming. Yes, sir. Yeah, you want to. Yeah, go ahead. Let me let you talk about that a second, sir.
No, absolutely. All of the documents that are out there now, I mean, with the real proof, shows that beyond a doubt that Roosevelt knew and several members of his cabinet knew that the Japanese were coming to bomb Pearl Harbor. FDR had tried for months to provoke Germany into an attack in the Atlantic. And the other thing that most people don't realize is we were, through the several programs, we were providing Britain with war materials while the war was going on before we were officially in it. Well, that in and of itself is an act of war. If you supply one side with war materials, you are a participant, pardon me. And so we overlook that because it was us, because anytime people judge themselves by a different standard than they judge other people, trouble's on the hoof, buddy.
Well put. I agree with you. If we can't hold ourselves to our own standards, then we're nobody. And that's exactly the way we have done, held ourselves to a different standard. You know, some are more equal than others. And it's true that Roosevelt and Churchill had met off of in the Atlantic and planned a lot of this stuff out before Pearl Harbor, that they had started the Lend-Lease and all that. There's a hidden history there that doesn't get talked about very much.
Well, go ahead, Stephen. I'm sorry.
Especially in the war movies, you see the kind of crap stuff that they put out. That Pearl Harbor movie that was, I don't know, around the year 2000 or so, was just such a, it was horrifying. It just terrible. The best, most accurate one I've seen was Tora, 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 when they had a film crew that filmed from Japan that filmed the Japanese side. And then, so that was more accurate than any of the ones I've seen since, I think.
Well, Stephen, there was a man in FDR's administration named Harry White. Actually, his last name was not White. He changed his name. He was Jewish. And this is documented very well in a book called Operation Snow, S-N-O-W. White was very, very instrumental, because the biggest problem, Russia was very much engaged in the late 30s. They were engaged on the Manchurian front against the Japanese, and then they were engaged in the Eastern front against Hitler and Germany. And Stalin knew there was no way in the world he could win a war on two fronts. So he had to get Japan off of his case. And because he had infiltrated the FDR administration and we were already sending war materials to Russia, he operated through his connections to get Japan to invade America because of the embargoes we had placed. What embargoes are also an act of war that people go, oh, Japan started World War II. No, they didn't. We were participating in the war, providing war materials to Russia and to Britain. White did a fantastic job. People, if you want to really get the truth evidence here, it's in a book called Operation Snow. And these communist agents, and there were over 230 communist agents in the FDR administration. I mean, from the Department of Agriculture through, the legal DOJ, through everything else, there were Russian agents.
And yes, sir. It seems like they set us up, too, the way they had the battleships all just sit there in the row, but made sure to have the aircraft carriers out to sea. It smells of more complicity than I've seen actual evidence for in the attack there, because, you know, they broke the code and knew something was coming. So, yeah.
Well, there was a Navy veteran. I'm trying to think of his name. Bob something. But there was a Navy veteran that really did a deep dive on this. And he wrote a book called Day of Deceit. And he goes into all of the official records. And if you can prove that book, this is not his opinion. It is one of the most well-documented books I've ever read. And he provides absolute proof that both FDR and Churchill knew that the Japanese were coming to bomb. They weren't sure it was Pearl Harbor until just a few days before it happened. That's why the aircraft carriers were moved out. By that time, reports had been issued. Oh, there's the music. We'll get back to it.
Thank you all. Hold on.
A strong man dies to cry. Things that crawl and things that fly, things that creep around on the ground. And they say the ghost of Lucius Clay gets up and he walks around. But I couldn't believe it. I just had to find out for myself, and I couldn't conceive it. Cause I never would listen to nobody else, and I couldn't believe it. I just had to find out for myself. There's some things in this world you just can't explain. Didn't think too much of him. They all thought he acted funny. The old man didn't care about people anyway. All he cared about was his money. He'd stuff it all down in the mason jars and he'd bury it all around. And on certain nights, if the moon was right, he'd dig it up out of the ground. He'd pour it all out on the floor.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now, but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing. Knowledge. and knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Have you been looking for a trusted long-term storable food company? We have a solution for you. Simply Clean Foods is dedicated to providing the best quality food you can buy next to fresh from a farmer's market. Our line of resealable fruits, vegetables, and meats are suitable for everyday use, and you won't have to worry about throwing away valuable groceries ever again. Our food is completely GMO-free, and our stringent quality controls, plus testing for heavy metals, makes us unique in the storable foods market. Simply Clean Foods' primary focus is to bring clean food to people all around the world and change the way we look at freeze-dried food in our daily cooking. When you purchase from Simply Clean Foods, not only will you be receiving high-quality food, but you will also be supporting veterans in need across the country and those who are affected by natural disasters.
Go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on Long-Term Food Storage in the rotating sponsors banners to support RBN.
Simply Clean Foods. Do it today.
Flag tied in my hand.
I had to let that play a little bit. I just love that song, Mike. Don't you? I like that Rebel Sun there. Oh yeah, and I did. Sorry. Go ahead, sir.
So appropriate, my friend. And to go back to make sure that I don't give people part or halfway information. The title of that book is Day of Deceit, The Truth About FDR and Pearl Harbor. And the author's name is Robert B. Stinnett, Stinnett. I believe that he passed away not too long ago, but he was you can get that book at thrift books for about $4, people. So if you want the truth.
Yes, sir. That if you want the truth, that's true. I agree with that. I was thinking about that while we were on break, is that you have to want to learn the truth, and you have to be able to learn perhaps that your mama's a hoe, as you pointed out sometimes when it comes to what the truth is. You know, we have to be able to examine our most sacred held beliefs, if we're going to ultimately, you know, if you can't question it, then is it worth knowing? You know, if it's there's, you know, there are no unquestionable truths. I'll just put it that way.
Well, absolutely. And some further points that we could hit on the Pearl Harbor thing is that the two commanders there, the general was General Short, Army General, and the admiral was Admiral Kimmel. And both of them, after Pearl Harbor, were demoted and relieved of command. These men were shamed. Now, ironically, very, very quietly in 1993, because the federal government was facing some lawsuits from those two men's ancestors, their grandchildren, because those lawsuits were being filed, the National Defense Authorization Act in 1993 exonerated them and returned their rank. Of course, they'd been dead too long for it to matter, except as far as reputation. But that was a move to stop those lawsuits being made public, which would have revealed to the American public that we knew that the Japanese were coming to bomb Pearl Harbor, and therefore the deaths of 20-some hundred people was on the hands of the government.
Well, exactly. Most of the deaths are on the hands of the government is what I've learned. The sad truth, you know, these masters of war have been doing this a long time. I was thinking about my father and his unit while we were on the break, too. My dad was one of Merrill's Marauders, the 5307th, that fought in northern Burma behind Japanese lines in 1944 for about, I think, 7 months, maybe, at the beginning. As they humped it, living off airdrops. It was LARPing without helicopters, basically. I mean, they definitely went through it, and they were lied to, and when they were recruited and stuff, it just a lot of shenanigans went on with that operation, and I grew up hearing my dad and his his colleagues, ex-colleagues, talk about that, and I knew it was bad. I didn't know it was really this bad until I started looking at it for it myself, into our history and how warped it is, and how contrived, and how the wars are all planned ahead of time, just as you were saying. I mean, this, and right now, who knows what they've got planned with this stuff? It does seem they're dragging this thing out with Russia. You know, it's just they always want to make the war longer, it seems like, just to keep the war going. The war machine makes them money, so why not keep it running? And I hear the music coming up. We'll be right back, folks.
Oh, I thought you were going to sing.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
In times like these, you can't depend on the government to keep you warm and fed, but you can depend on the Vermont Bun Baker to do just that. With a Vermont Bun Baker, you'll never be in a situation where you can't cook, bake, fry, boil water, or heat your home all at the same time. One of the most revolutionary cook stoves, wood stoves ever, the Vermont Bun Baker is available with or without soapstone veneer, a natural stone that retains heat and radiates it back into the room once the fire is out. A beautiful addition to your home, the Vermont Bun Baker has an efficiency rating well above 75% and qualifies for the wood stove tax credit. For more information, watch the Vermont Bun Baker on YouTube and live stream, or visit us at www.vermontwoodstove.com. You can also reach us by calling 1-866-SOAPSTONE. Don't ever be hungry or cold because the power's gone out. With a Vermont Bun Baker, all you have to worry about is what's for dinner.
Extendivite testimonials on Amazon are very informative. Here's just a few. Amazon customer, 5 stars. Honestly, this stuff works. Nick, easy to take capsules. For those who can't handle the liquid drops, easy-to-take Extendivite capsules do the same job. Karoka Fam works great. Like Extendivite very much. Seems to work as advertised. Thanks. Arlene, 5 stars. Love this product, Extendivite. Terry W, 5 stars. Can't say enough. Great product. Freya, 5 stars. I just ordered another. To get your Extendivite today, go to extendivite.com. That's extendivite.com. Or call us at 1-877-928-8822.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Welcome back, everyone. This is Thought Crime Live on the Public Broadcasting Network, and I'm Stephen Douglas Whitener. I have Mike Gaddy with me. We've been discussing World War II history most recently. Mike, let me go back to where you cut off by the music there.
Okay, buddy. One of the things, I just got a reminder from a very good friend of mine who keeps telling me, he said, well, you keep recommending people read books for the truth to a group of people who don't read anymore. So let me just give a little bit of background before we get to callers about the Operation Snow that I was talking about. Won't take but a minute or so here, Stephen. And that was the fact that Harry Dexter White was involved in this. He was an agent for the Soviets. And he was during that time, he was the top official in the Treasury Department, and he was very, very close friends with another Soviet agent by the name of Henry Morgenthau, who was his secretary, and he was also involved with several other communist agents in the FDR administration. But White was also in close contact with Vitaly Pavlov, who was the second-in-command of the NKVD in Russia, which later became the KGB. So the two plotted a strategy, which they called Operation Snow. Now, all of this can now be found in documents in the U.S. archives as well as in the Japanese archives. So this is not just speculation. This Operation Snow initiated a toppling of dominoes that ultimately led to December 7th, 1941. The main issue was oil. Japan didn't have any and had to acquire it either from the Soviet Union or from the United States. So White worked furiously to pull levels of American government power to provoke an attack from Japan, sparing the Soviets, which was his job. He did so by influencing Roosevelt himself against reaching a diplomatic deal with the Japanese, although the Japanese were offering diplomatic deals the day of, that morning of Pearl Harbor, or the day before, I'm sorry. They were trying to do a diplomatic, and so then they were here trying to reach a diplomatic agreement, and then they were accused of being here when Pearl Harbor happened, of being the ultimate spy. So it was just unreal.
Also, they were stalled and prevented from giving their declaration of war before the attack, were they not? I've seen that story a few times, that when they, even though they were here, that they were going to do it right at the moment, but they were stalled until after. Or is that just Hollywood history?
No, that is accurate. But here's something I think the folks need to know, is that Harry Dexter White implicated himself. He admitted all of this in August of 1948 in testimony before the House Committee on Un-American Activities. He admitted doing all of this publicly, and then mysteriously died 3 days later.
Okay.
Allegedly from suicide. 1948.
Oh, 48. Okay, yes. 48. Wow. I wasn't aware of that either. I did learn from you that there was a Soviet agent that was living actually in the White House, wasn't there? This guy that was next to FDR, what was that guy's name? That wasn't White, but it was, yeah.
His name was Harry something. I can't think of his last name at this time.
It's been this way for a long time. We've had the best enemies that money can buy going all the way back. These masters of war, they want to crank up another one all over and over again. It's frustrating. I agree. Let's tell listeners where they can find more history before we take callers too, Mike. If you guys would like to learn more history from Mike Gaddy, if you go to the Telegram app, there's Tuesdays at 9 p.m. there's a Teach Me True History class. And also, if you have a Podbean app, there are other podcasts that I post on there on the American National Radio Network on podbean.com as well. But the Telegram on Tuesday nights is where I started learning this from Mr. Gaddy. And, you know, I learn a lot from you, man. I really want to know the truth that I've had hidden from me. I want to unlearn the Hollywood history that's been programmed in me. And to do that, you've got to go back and forensically prove to yourself what's what. You don't tell people to believe what you tell them, but to go prove you wrong. Do you not, sir?
Absolutely. Absolutely. But you've hit on something very poignant there, and that is the fact you have to want to know the truth. Most Americans, as Emma Goldman said back in the 1930s, almost 100 years ago, Americans don't want to be free, they want to be comfortable. So if you're going to tell them some history that's going to make them the least bit uncomfortable, they will turn you off, turn on the lobotomy box, and watch somebody play with a ball.
Yes, so they want to be entertained as well. That's the other big thing about Americans. Well, I see we have some callers coming back. I'll go to the callers now. Thanks very much for that. And you guys check out Mike Gaddy's Rebel Madman radio show, which comes on at 3 p.m. Central on Saturdays, too. Today you're going to talk about Stonewall Jackson, I believe. Is that right, sir?
Yes, sir. Today is Stonewall's, or would be, it's the 199th anniversary of Stonewall's birth.
Awesome.
So I'm going to do a tribute to Stonewall Jackson today at 3 p.m. Central, 4 p.m. Eastern, and with some dramatic comparisons between Stonewall Jackson and those people we call heroes today.
Okay, thank you, sir. All right, first up, we have Tom in Florida. Hello, Tom. How are you doing? Thanks for calling.
Yep. Yes, sir. Good day, gentlemen. Good day, Stephen. Good day, Mike. Good day to you guys.
How you doing, sir?
Mike, I can't wait to hear that about Stonewall Jackson, because I tell you, if he would have not got shot by his own troops, I believe that the tide of the war would have went to the South, because he was the greatest general, and I do believe they would have won. They would have definitely probably, it would have been a stalemate. If anything, that war would have ended in a stalemate with Stonewall Jackson, because even Ulysses S. Grant and Tecumseh William Sherman, they said they didn't want to have to face him on the battlefield. They did not want to face his command on the battlefield, and I believe if Stonewall would have survived, he would have stalemated that war, if anything. And now I want to go to Robert E. Lee. You made some great points about Robert E. Lee. Robert E. Lee was a Southern gentleman. And I can tell you this, if it wasn't for Robert E. Lee, the Civil War probably would not have ended, because Nathan Bedford Forrest had the right idea how he could have won that. He could have brought that to a stalemate. And even Jefferson Davis. Nathan Bedford Forrest brought you guerrilla warfare tactics, and he wanted to use six-man bands to fight, finish off the Civil War. In other words, there would be not hundreds of men marching up into the field. He wanted to go into guerrilla warfare tactics. Are you familiar with that, Mike?
Oh, very much so. And don't forget that that had been very successful. The guerrilla type warfare had been very successful in Northern Virginia there for years with Mosby. Mosby had been doing it right within eyesight of Washington, D.C. for the better part of 2 years. And that was, and Stonewall told both Robert E. Lee and Jefferson Davis that the South could not win a protracted war because they didn't have the industrial backing. If they were going to do it, they would have to do it quickly, which they ignored him. They wanted to fight a defensive war. But then when they saw that things were not going to go that well, and they decided to adhere to Stonewall's tactics, then immediately things begin to change. But it always bothered me that Robert E. Lee would not promote John Singleton Mosby, would not promote him above the rank of colonel because of the type of warfare he was fighting. And in a letter that I read, Robert E. Lee said that to fight a guerrilla warfare was unmanly. And I believe that was a great mistake. But yes, I'm most familiar with that. Thank you for bringing it up.
Yes, and also, Mike, I have to say this. You were talking about Nat Turner. This guy murdered, I believe, was 89 men, women, and children, mostly a lot of them children. 89 of them, now, I believe, were murdered. Is that the correct number?
Yes, that's very close. I'm not exactly sure. I'm not sure any of us will know an exact number, but I know it was in that neighborhood. And the thing that bothered me is when you read even his own statement about the number of innocent white children he murdered in bed and even in the crib.
Yes, that's disgusting. If they would ever put a statue of him up there, then I know the whole country's unraveled, because then I will definitely believe to myself, and I hope you do too, Stephen and Michael, that our country's the white majority's totally gone snowflake. And it's a shame. It's a damn shame what they're doing. I want to get to World War II now. You're talking about Pearl Harbor. Look, first off, Mike, look what they did to George Patton. Look what they did to Patton after he was in the movie with George C. Scott, if you remember, when he's standing by the big flag and he's saying we fought the wrong sons of bitches. He was absolutely right. And I believe he was the commander of a Bavarian troops from Bavaria. Is that true?
There were some in the Third Army, yes. Not a large number, but there were some.
And I believe they had to shut Patton up because Patton was getting too. I believe if he would have came back to the States politically, he could have had a bigger chance to win the presidency than even Eisenhower. That's my opinion. And they had to shut him up.
Well, I'm not sure he would have wanted it, but let's remember that. I believe that the murder of Patton, the assassination of Patton, was done a combined effort between the OSS and the NKVD. Because Patton had done two things that were unforgivable. Number one, he had written a letter to his wife saying that he was getting out of the army and he wanted to reveal how the Allies had made the war last over a year longer than it should have, when it should have been won in France at Falaise Gap. And he wrote that to his wife, and he said, I'm going to tell the American public the truth. Especially the Battle of the Bulge. We lost 80,000 men at the Battle of the Bulge. Never should have happened.
Right.
Well, you know, and I believe that letter was intercepted. And then number two was he confronted Eisenhower on a train platform just a little over 10 days before his death, where he and Eisenhower ended up screaming at each other about the POWs that Russia had taken, put on troop trains. American POWs had put on troop trains and had taken them to Siberia. And Patton was absolutely incredibly angry about that. That is documented in the National Archives as well.
Also, I got to tell Stephen and you this, Mike. I didn't realize, but in 1935, you know who the biggest hero in the United States was at that time? Other than Babe Ruth and all the baseball, the biggest hero in 1935 was a guy named Charles Lindbergh. And Charles Lindbergh was a German-American. His family came out of Germany, and I believe Henry Ford also had German in him, and he wrote The International Jew. And in 1935, they were going to do everything and anything they could to make the German-Americans in this country at that time look like to be ashamed of themselves. And I believe in The International Jew, Ford wrote, there's a part in there where he said that the Germans never owned slaves. And that Jews, man, they wanted to get, and of course, you know, he helped with the industrial, he was doing part of selling all the Jeeps and all that to the government. But Henry Ford was basically saying, hey, wait a minute, the German Americans that are in this country, they're the people out of the fatherland of Germany never owned slaves. So they don't have a guilt about like other European countries that have had slave trade. So, and of course, Lindbergh was a big hero from the Spirit of St. Louis, and they shamed the German Americans. They were shaming all the German Americans in this country for their Zionist plot.
Let me interject here and ask Mike this: since you said that, couldn't you look at the Prussian soldiers that were raised up as slaves? I mean, they were owned by the state pretty much, weren't they, Mike? And thanks for the call, Tom.
Yeah, very much, Tom. Appreciate that. You brought up some very valid points. Appreciate it, sir. But I hope you'll understand as we have some other people waiting, and let's try to get to as many as we can.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Tom. And next up,
thank you, Tom.
Mike in Kentucky.
Well, good morning, We Can Hope. I reached the end of the internet after I heard an interview on RBN a couple of years ago. I typed in the skeleton in Uncle Sam's closet, and there was only a couple of results came up, and Google said, you've reached the end. And I thought, I've heard about the rumor of reaching the end of the internet. But that's a story about a guy whose dad, before he died, told him stuff that he pledged he wouldn't tell. Over a week before, this friend of his family, which was an upper echelon military guy in Pearl Harbor, told him, go buy some food, squirrel back some water, there's an attack coming. So there's people that knew to get prepared over a week before. The Honolulu Advertiser newspaper had a headline over it about that. And they'd broken the codes. They knew that they were planning it. So no wonder they had the aircraft carriers out. But going back to the war between the stakes, I believe it's Salmon P. Chase that avoided the trial of Jefferson Davis by saying he will win in court what was lost on the battlefield and walk right back into the White House of the Confederacy. Have you read that?
Yes, not only Chase, but all, and Chase was Chief Justice of the Supreme Court by then, but also Seward and Stanton both said that if we try him, if we bring him, then we could all be convicted of war crimes. They weren't about to try him publicly.
It's in a book called The Long Surrender, which is co-authored by one of Jefferson Davis's descendants. But I just recently found out New York State, or the state of New York, whatever, offered, I think, South Carolina 100,000 troops to help defend against the general government if they seceded?
Yes, that was Fernando Wood.
All right. Well, don't you think that hints at that this was a fomented war to divide this country, because I think the bankers were worried that we were going to dominate the world's financial system? So they they wanted to take America apart and saddle them with debt. And we're still under it.
Well, Mike, you can look at that through several different eyes on that, but it's exactly correct. And the war was started being fomented after Andrew Jackson left office.
Well, that's what I was going to get to next. Jackson and no bank. One of the funniest things in history, I wish they taught me in school, was that his parrot had to be kicked out of his funeral for cussing. Who taught the parrot to cuss? It had to be him, right?
So, yeah, I can imagine.
Was it Andy
Jackson? Every pirate needs a parrot. We're running out of time. I'll let you go. I got more, but you got more callers. Thanks.
Thanks, Mike. Appreciate it, buddy.
Thanks a lot for the call, Mike. Next up is Art in Georgia. Hello, Art.
Good morning, gentlemen. I just have a question, and I'll take my answer off air. Somebody told me many years ago we were talking about the attack on Pearl Harbor, and this is going back several years ago. And he told me that two two things that I've not been able to verify. The first one is that there was a write-up in Honolulu newspaper, I think it was called the Hilo or something like that. Dang, got this frog in my throat. And supposedly he says that there was a write-up in the newspaper about a week prior to the attack. And the second thing he told me was that Roosevelt knew in advance, and he had all the code-breaking equipment and the radar tracking equipment dismantled and removed from Pearl Harbor. Is there any truth to that at all?
Yes, sir. You'll find verification of that in Operation Snow, the book. Both of those are very well documented. It's not just rumor.
Okay, that's what I needed to know. Thank you, gentlemen. Have a great day.
You too, sir.
Thanks for the call. And with that, I think that clears the lines. If anyone else has a question, please feel free to call in. And let me go back to back to what he was saying about the Honolulu paper. It's like I've seen some very strange things about happened at Pearl Harbor that day, and you know, just I don't know, the Hollywood's version of it really, really got to me back in 2000. That movie with Cuba Gooding Jr. I mean, it was so over the top and BS. You know, at least that. Just as Patton said, 80,000 more troops died because they didn't end the war. I mean, people, all of this, it infuriates me that they just want to keep this war going on and on to keep spending. It doesn't. They'll invent an enemy for us. They'll buy one for us. You know, they'll go create it, because a lot of people don't remember that Arm & Hammer and American industrialists, they supplied the USSR for many years. You know, they got the, we had the best enemies money could buy. I mean, I'm serious about that when I say that. That's the way things went. Am I wrong, sir?
No, read Major Jordan's diary. Look at his testimony before Congress. He was in charge of the Lend-Lease program. We sent Russia military supplies that were destined for MacArthur in the Pacific, and we took them away from MacArthur and sent them to Russia. That is how much Russia dominated what we were doing in World War II. Not only that, but Russia was given all of the plans and all of the materials to make their own atomic weapon. And then later, what, we executed some people for giving the Russians secrets that they already had because our government gave it to them?
Yeah, exactly. It goes back a long way that we've just been tools with these people. If the national governments do not exist to, you know, to further the nation state's interest, but to answer to their debtors, the one that they owe the money to. When you let the money in, you know, that's what happens to a nation state, usury. We have another caller, sir.
Murr. Oh my goodness, it's Murr.
Hi, Murr. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Can good morning. Nice to hear both
morning,
of your
Murr.
Voices. Hey. Yeah, I like your guests there, Stephen. You need to have them all the time. Yeah. I was going to say, there was a terrible movie that you don't want to see from 1975, Mandingo.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. There's a lot of movies you don't want to see. In fact, just don't see any of them. Get rid of all the Talmud. Oh. Don't watch any of it. That's the propaganda. It's been that way through history. You know, with the press, the propagandizing press. I mean, they did it in the French Revolution. They've done it all through time to gin up these bloodbaths for Satan, you know? So,
absolutely.
And I've got a chat room for each of you. Art that was just on, he has the official chat room for you, Stephen. ThoughtCrimeLive.chatango.com, I believe, is his. And mine is the same, except it has a number 2 in front of it. I just like these annexes where I can put notes, right? And then for Michael, I have rebelmanradio.chatango.com. So, but thank you for having me.
You are a treasure.
Yeah,
and
thanks
listen,
very
listen
much.
Listen to Whistling Dixie, Whistling Dixie number 15, and I believe you're the one that posts that to your American National thing there,
yes,
Stephen.
Network is on the Podbean thing. Yes, Whistling Dixie and the other things are on there. Thanks for mentioning that. Yeah.
Would you give the title of that out again? That your Podbean for people on air. I'll hang up. Thank you. Bye bye.
Okay. Yeah. American
thanks,
National. Yep. Sorry, Mike. And thanks again, Murr. American National Radio Network, and that's on the Podbean.com. Lots of Mike Sledge's work is on there too. Is like over 700 different podcasts. And if anyone's interested in more of this or some anything you hear on RBN, you know, along with associated with me, you might find there. But I appreciate that. Mike, go ahead. Let me toss it back to you before we run out of time.
Well, Stephen, I want to thank you for putting lesson that we had with the Jim Ram on Thursday on what happened to the $31 million during the Revolutionary War. I want to thank you for putting that into Podbean as well. And that is something everyone should listen to, because I promise you, you're not going to be taught that in any communist school.
Yes, sir. That was the latest one I put up. I did something wrong the first of the week when I went to post them, and I got this big red X. So I'm a little behind. Anybody out there listening, you know, follows that regularly. I haven't posted anything for about a week, but whatever I did wrong, I got right today and started putting them back up again. Yeah, and with that, I hear the music coming on. Thanks very much. Y'all tune into Rebel Madman Radio with Mike Gaddy later. And remember, the thought crime today helps keep tyranny at bay. Thanks.
Thanks, Stephen. Happy birthday, Stonewall.
Please grant me just this one last request. Dixieland is where I want to make my final stand. I don't care if I'm in a box or not when they lay me down. Just bury me in southern ground. One last look at the countryside before I close my weary eyes. Southern air from my last breath, here comes my sweet angel of death. Sing Dixie while they lower me, so I'll hear it for eternity. I can feel the reaper's touch, ashes to ashes, dust to dust. Friend, when my time has come, before they lay me down to rest, friend, in my time of darkness, please grant me just this one last request.
Are you one of the millions of people who feel like there is a dark cloud hanging over their heads whenever they're using pharmaceutical drugs? For some, the short-term relief can turn into an opioid addiction nightmare. Have you ever wondered why CBD oil is a billion-dollar industry? It's because it works better than opioids and is actually healthy for you. However, CBD oil is stripped of all other helpful compounds found in the hemp plant. According to neuroscientists, the whole hemp plant, otherwise known as hemp paste, is even more effective than the chemically processed CBD oil. Are you ready to take back your health? You can try hemp paste by going to rbnhemppaste.com. That's rbnhemppaste.com.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.